I could have everybody take their seats.
Good morning. Welcome to the action agenda session for the Commonwealth Transportation Board for its March meeting. What we'll do today is have our action item agendas, but also there's a few things I will take and update the board on regarding some incidents that happened yesterday, and we may need some additional action depending on how those discussions go as we go through the agenda. The first item on the agenda, though, is public comment. I don't think we have anyone signed up, but is there anyone in the audience? And since I see mostly VDOT and other employees, it's probably not, but if there's anybody in the audience that would like to address the board publicly, now would be the time to do so. Okay, seeing none, let's move on to the approval of the February 17, 2016 minutes.
Motion.
Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, before we get into the actions, let me update the board on the incident that happened yesterday with Metro in Northern Virginia, the D.C. area. As you know, approximately about 3 o'clock yesterday, we got the word here, or I got the word, and I apologize for going in and out of this meeting, that the general manager of Metro had made a decision that he thought there was a possibility of a life-threatening condition that existed with wiring in the Metro system. What spurred into this was approximately 4:30 on Monday morning, there was an incident where smoke was in a tunnel. And as you recall, about Ms. Mitchell, was it about a year ago when we had the other smoke incident?
January
of last year, we had a smoke incident in the tunnel. Which resulted, I believe, in one casualty and one death. So the new general manager took this seriously and had a board meeting yesterday, which he recommended and his board approved that there be a shutdown of the system beginning at midnight last night and lasting through 5 a.m. tomorrow morning. I think that's a total of 29 hours that it will be down. What they'll be doing, and they're doing as we speak, is inspecting the cables that are suspected of having bad insulation on them, which with moisture, which is causing them to arc. Now, this is not a result of a non-inspection of the cables, because those are the same cables that were inspected at the last incident. Excuse me, and declared that the ones that need to be repaired had been repaired, or the others were safe. I know there's a lot of reports saying lack of oversight, and we can get into that, but this particular incident was a result of a safety inspection that had already occurred during the last 12 months. So we took the decision to go back and reinspect them. I don't know how long. We're hopeful that at the end of the day today, or the night at midnight, or sometime in the early morning hours tomorrow, that the decision will be made that we can go back to normal operations. But we don't know that to be the case. We have not received, I don't think, Ms. Mitchell, you've received anything about the status of the
inspection.
Yeah,
no, not yet.
So we'll let you know as soon as we know. Ms. Mitchell and Mr. Kilpatrick have been working with agencies across the Commonwealth in Northern Virginia to handle the expected additional capacity in our bus systems and on our roadways. Mr. Kilpatrick has got additional people up there monitoring the HOV lanes. He's spoken with our partners at Transurban who do the express lanes. And they are monitoring the traffic flow to enhance its whatever we can to enhance that flow through there. He's got extra people on watching that and additional safety patrols and what have you. Ms. Mitchell, on the other hand, has been in touch with transportation agencies, the bus agencies, BRE, determining if there is additional help that could be done, if they can adjust their schedules to handle this capacity as we work through today. So I'm very comfortable that our agencies have taken the appropriate actions, and after I finish, you can ask them any questions you want as to what we've done and how we're doing this. Certainly, there were some complaints that this decision was taken very quickly. A lot of, for instance, the Office of Homeland Security was not coordinated with before this happened. I can't answer any of those questions. That was really was Metro. But there has been a limited, I think the federal government is on liberal leave today, and so there has been efforts to curtail the amount of traffic moving around the region. The issue we face is if this were to go on for several days. I'm not sure it will or it won't, but I think we need to be prepared if that's the case. And so one of the things that, besides what DDOT's doing and monitoring and doing all it can on the roadways, one of the things that I believe would be appropriate for this board to do is to allow Ms. Mitchell, to the extent these bus agencies and other transit agencies are able to gear up their operations, to offer financial assistance in doing that for a short period of time through an emergency use of her budget. She has reserves which are available to her. I'm not even sure if I need your approval to do this, but I'm going to bring it to your attention under the new business section. She's drafting up a resolution for you to consider because I would like you to understand and be in approval just in case there's any question whatsoever. It'll be subject to Ms. Mitchell's plan, subject to me approving it, and obviously I don't think we're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars, but it certainly could be hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars in that to help us get through this. So I wanted to make you aware of what you know. I have briefed the governor on this. There's one of the things that is being, Ms. Mitchell has been, and we'll brief you on next month, has been working with Maryland and D.C., and Mr. Biden knows a lot about this, on setting up a new safety oversight commission that was that we're working with the federal authorities on. We'll be delivering the time schedule for that to the federal authorities this Friday. We're moving through that. That's very important. But I do want to make clear that passing a law to do that is not going to solve the issue we're dealing with today. In fact, for the first time since I've been secretary, this is the first action I've seen Metro management proactively take, and you can decide whether or not you think it's appropriate, but for they've taken responsibility for the safety of the system. And Governor McAuliffe and I have been clear, administration, that the safe, reliable system is the number one objective of management. So having that culture in there is the real answer to this problem. Don't get me wrong. We're very much working to get this other commission set up. But if it was simple as just passing a law, then we wouldn't have any problems because we've passed many laws that haven't fixed a lot of things. And I don't want to, again, demean or misunderstand how quickly we are working and need to get this Metro Safety Commission up. But the real safety is in Metro management. They have demonstrated that they are now paying attention to that. And so that in itself, I believe, is a very positive sign for this agency moving forward. I'm not an engineer or a politician. I run businesses, and safety is the responsibility of the management of the business, the culture that exists there. And so we condone and applaud Metro for showing that. I'm sure there'll be a lot of questions about this decision that they'll do, but from the perspective of at least recognizing that safety is a part of their system, the governor and Virginia and his administration are behind that acknowledgement that that is a part of what should be primary in their culture of running a Metro. Metro has a lot in front of it it's got to fix. We have a long ways to go, today we'll be working with them on how to handle the situation to get through the immediate thing, and we'll certainly be working with our partners to get this new Metro Safety Commission set up. So with that, let me first of all turn it over to Charlie or Jennifer if there's anything y'all want to add to that.
Just real briefly, in terms of traffic operations, our operations center in Northern Virginia monitoring the roadway conditions as well as the HOV network and working with Transurban on the HOT network. I talked with the director this morning, and traffic flow was similar to what they would expect on a Wednesday, but again, continuing to keep a close eye on that, making sure that if we do need to make adjustments in terms of the express lanes or the HOV lanes, that we can move quickly to do that. But again, we have additional patrollers, safety service patrollers out there. State police is increasing their presence, not for enforcement, but for response to incidents. So we'll stay on it throughout as long as this event goes.
Ms. Mitchell, anything to add?
Likewise, a number of the local transit services have either increased frequency or they've modified their routes to be able to, particularly routes that they had that were serving Metro Rail stations, to be able to take people to bus transfer centers instead, where they could access either Metro bus into the city or other regional transit services. So we're continuing to monitor that as well, and as the secretary mentioned, we'll continue to coordinate with the systems on any sort of longer term plans that may need to be implemented should either the shutdown continue, or I think another possibility is whether or not if depending on the results of these inspections today, if there are things like entire closure of lines or single tracking or just a protracted impact on Metro Rail service, that we may need to be able to ramp up bus service instead. So we'll be working with the local transit services to figure out what we can do. In some cases, unfortunately, bus and transit systems are limited by the number of vehicles and the number of drivers they have, but they may be able to redeploy assets in ways that are helpful.
Has there never been a plan put together?
There's a regional operations center right now that through the Metropolitan Washington Council of Governments, and our staff, along with VDOT staff, have been participating in those calls last night. And so they have been working on, you know, and part of that is to coordinate all of the local transit providers as well. So
there's a plan in place.
There is not a plan necessarily for what do you do if the entire Metro Rail system is shut down.
This is the first time, I believe, it has been shut other than for weather conditions, other than being closed when it had the accident. But I think it's the first time the whole system, we believe, has been shut down, other than through weather conditions. Let me go to Ms. Rose and I'll come back. Mr. Farrell. Mr. Rose.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If we thought or explored the idea, the possibility of taking some other transit companies throughout the Commonwealth who may have additional buses and drivers who may be willing to send some.
That may be a possibility if necessary to try to.
Protracted.
Yeah, if this turns into a protracted situation.
Mr. Farrell.
Two things. I know we already have some hot lanes up there, and I believe we got provisions in the contract that allow us to force them to open those up to all traffic. And I think I got a news release yesterday that said they weren't doing that, but they were going to donate the money to somebody. And I'm not sure if this qualifies or not, but I think we ought to look at that. And if this doesn't qualify, we ought to be looking at some of these agreements.
Mr. Kirkpatrick, can respond to that?
Yeah, in terms of contractually, there are, in the case of mass evacuations, the restrictions are lifted, all restrictions can be lifted, and in the case where the lanes are blocked, where the general purpose lanes are blocked, we can lift the restriction. But
what's blocked mean? Tied up in traffic? Or
no, blocked means physically blocked with an incident. The express lanes, they are used to try to maximize maximize getting people, not just the number of vehicles through. So part of what our folks are looking at, I'm looking at the cameras now, the delays are really occurring up around the Pentagon 14th Street Bridge, which is sort of anticipated. At that point, those are HOV only, and at this point, HOV restrictions end in a few minutes on that stretch of roadway. So we're going to continue to monitor that. Those lanes are available to all drivers, paying the toll. So right now the agreement, the contract between Transurban and Commonwealth, there are some provisions, but the provisions do not apply in this particular case.
Okay. Mr. Phil, I had the same reaction you did last evening about the announcement about that. And I think we will look at what provisions going forward.
Okay, good. I think the other thing is I wasn't looking at VDOT cameras, I was looking at Google Maps. And the traffic is a little backed up, but it's not crazy. I thought it was going to be complete red everywhere.
Well, I think that's because the federal government. A lot of people have stayed home.
Okay.
But I think that's clearly that can't continue.
I think it would be interesting to see. I know we know how many riders ride the train every day, but I'm not sure we understand the flexibility of people have. And this will be interesting to see for that. So.
I would sense there's a practical limit on the amount of vehicles that can drive into Washington. Not just the lane capacity, but the parking capacity. So there's a practical limit on the amount of parking available within the District of Columbia. I don't think there's a significant surplus in parking spaces available. And that to a certain extent holds the amount of vehicles down.
Is Washington, D.C. doing anything with that? In other words, saying they're not going to enforce parking regulations or something for today or anything?
I kind of think we can answer that. I know that they are, just from comments that I've seen, that they are looking at the same things we are inside the city.
And I did hear that anecdotally that many of the parking garages were already full by like 6 a.m. People were getting up early and getting in to get a parking space. So.
I think they were offering free parking.
At the metro station,
I noticed Uber. I mean, they made an announcement about their surge pricing being, they were going to be considerate. I mean, but we're going to learn a lot, but it's a tough situation, and particularly if it goes on in that.
Mr. Connors. One thing that came up this morning in our subcommittee was the need to maybe improve our push messaging application to get information out on alternative modes of transportation in these kind of situations. And I think we've got an opportunity to do something there. I heard the Uber thing too. They're also carpooling.
Yes.
They have carpooling prices, and Lyft has car, So there are other ways to get around. And a lot of people I learned this morning just weren't aware. So it'd be nice to improve on I think one of our responsibilities is to alert people and also give them some alternative modes to get around these kind of problems. And I think there's an opportunity we talked about this morning.
Okay, any other comments on this? If not, we'll bring it up under new business, and I hope we'll have a resolution for you to consider in the event that we could offer some additional monies if it goes on in that. I have one more announcement that I wanted to do before we got into the action items. Speaking getting around Washington, D.C., our Deputy Secretary, Grinley Johnson, took the train up yesterday and is still up there. But she went up there to be recognized. And I think Secretary Fox was at this. As one of the women who moved the nation award in transportation. Ms. Johnson is one of 14 women leaders to be honored by the Conference of Minority Transportation Officials, COMTO, this week. The national award is presented to women leaders who represent a large cross-section of transportation professionals in both private and public sectors. So the governor has recognized her for her leadership, and I wanted the board to know that we have, we're very grateful and very honored that Ms. Johnson won this award, and that's why she hadn't been here. And I'm not quite sure where she is now trying to get in that, but I did want the board to know that she had won this award, and very proud of Ms. Johnson for her her activities in transportation and her leadership.
So if she can get out of that mess, we can get her another one.
And that's just for
we have a man on the ground up there. Bring that, yeah, first person information.
Okay, last announcement. We do have, as you all know, we have the new iPads in place here. And Mr. Brella, I wanted to mention this. I don't know if you got a chance to listen yesterday. A lot of this has to do, eventually after this meeting, you'll have them where you take with you, and we'll update without having to get immediately things that will be discussed at the next meeting. So you'll have them, and this is an effort that you have information in front of you much more quickly. And presentations to look at. Instead of going through email and emailing this, it'll just be out there, and Carol will let you know another presentation has been added or something in that regard. So that's what this is about. Okay, let's go ahead and get into today's action item. First of all, we have Mr. Gregg. Good morning, Mr. Gregg.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Have two items to bring before you today. First item is in Brunswick County. It's a memorial bridge on February 17th. The Brunswick County Board of Supervisors wishing to commemorate and honor the lives of brave men and women who have served this country in war and peace in the United States Armed Forces passed a resolution requesting the bridge located on Route 46, Christina Highway over Maharen River, be named the Brunswick County Veterans Memorial Bridge. VI staff recommends approval.
Mr. Brown.
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Yeah, any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you.
The second is another bridge naming. It's in Charlotte County, Lynchburg District. November the 10th, Charlotte County Board of Supervisors wishing to honor Mr. Curtis W. Thorpe's entrepreneurial spirit and contribution to economic development in Charlotte County, passed a resolution requesting the bridge located on State Route 47 Tollhouse Highway over Roanoke Creek be named the Curtis W. Thorpe Memorial Bridge.
I move the resolution.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Gregg. Ms. Brown.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. I have two items for you this morning. The first, we have a request for economic development access funds to serve a project in Appomattox County in the Lynchburg District. This is a regular or traditional project to serve a named business, Express Natural Gas. The company plans to invest $7.8 million and employ 50 individuals with the construction of the new facility. We recommend approval of this request.
I move this resolution.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion?
Mr. Chair, just briefly, we had a big discussion about these programs yesterday. And I just wanted Ms. Brown to know that I hope that she didn't think that reflected on the job she does with them. You do a tremendous job with them. It's just my frustration is me not doing it at all. But I wanted to make that clear to you that was,
yeah.
You do a great job with this stuff.
Thank you.
Any other comments or discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, Ms. Brown.
The second item, we have a request for a revenue share and transfer. This is from Wise County. And this is to transfer funds from a project that is under construction, and these are funds that are no longer needed to transfer to a project that needs additional funding to move forward. We recommend approval of this request.
So moved.
Second. Any other discussion or a discussion on this project? All right, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Thank you, Ms. Brown. Ms. Pryor, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. I have two items for you today. The first is our normal monthly transfers of surplus funds to scheduled projects. I recommend your approval.
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Okay, the second item is an amendment of a safety project in Northern Virginia. I recommend your approval.
Motion.
Second.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Mr. Fraylor.
I just
Could we have a little more detail? We're adding something to the six-year plan, which is out of cycle, right?
Yes,
or modifying it?
This particular project is installing a concrete barrier on a bridge over Appetink Creek to close the gap in the guardrail in the median area. Typically, our districts and our traffic engineering division work together to repurpose surplus funds from completed projects to advance other safety projects as quickly as they can rather than wait for a six-year program update cycle.
Mr. Frail, the funding sources, the HSIP funds, that's the federal safety program. And generally speaking, that money is distributed to the 9 districts, and there's a rating process and a scoring process that traffic engineering administers and a cost-benefit process. We could wait on a project like this and just put it into the regular cycle, but again, the effort is trying to put these safety projects, and this, as you see, is a relatively modest project at just under $400,000. To continue to move those forward. So sometimes in the area of HSIP, it could be as simple as a striping project. This one happens to be putting up a concrete barrier wall to deal with a gap in the barrier wall between the barrier and guardrail. But again, what you'll see in the updated six-year plan, you'll see dozens of HSIP projects that will come on, new ones, but at the same time during the year. That's really the process of this. I don't think you will typically see this in what are special funds that are, it could be this fund, occasionally it might be an RSDP that's managed by the MPO, or it might be a CMAC project managed by the MPO where they're able to move a project forward.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I mean, obviously safety comes first and I understand it, but it sounds like this is, we don't just add stuff to the six-year program based on safety only. I don't have a problem with this project. It's a safety project. But the other one, you know, we can get out of, you know, we have a cycle for a reason. And, you know, I just would be careful about.
Yeah, I agree. I thought, now, HSIP doesn't go through the House Bill 2 process.
No. That's correct.
And so I think anything that would go through that, obviously,
right,
cannot. But I understand your point. We should explain that this is a revenue source that doesn't go through House Bill 2,
right,
and therefore we're moving it forward. I think that's
one thing that I'm going to ask as we move forward. If we are adding a project, then we have a clear, concise description as
right
to why we're adding it and why we're not waiting.
Right.
And again, I think that's an absolutely fair statement and question for the board to ask. We are trying to move things forward, but we also need to be clear on why this can't wait. Or shouldn't wait.
Okay. Any more discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, thank you. Ms. Pryor, we'll have that, identify the revenue source and why you're putting it in at that particular time. Okay, thank you. Mr. Kilpatrick, tell us about this agreement.
Absolutely. Next item 7. Is action to authorize me to enter into agreement with HR TAC regarding the engineering for segment 3 of the I-64 widening. As you recall yesterday in my brief, this project came in 3 segments. Segment 1 and 2 are under contract to go to construction. Segment 3, we're going to initiate the engineering work. This is a standard agreement that we have worked out, that Mr. Walden has worked out with Council for HR TAC, and again, it authorizes, you're authorizing me to begin the engineering work, and it will be charged against the project. I think the initial allocation is $10 million towards engineering services, and that is HR TAC money. It is not CTB money.
I make a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, thank you. You know, I know you're going to go to the TPO or just HR
tax. HR tax tomorrow.
We should probably have TPO, since they've adopted their funding plan, come up and present to us.
The TPO or HR tax?
TPO. I think would be the appropriate, because they're the ones where they had really adopted it, the plan of how they're funding it.
Okay.
Yeah, in other words, the HR TAC actually is part of the funding, but I just how they're using that.
Okay. Yeah.
I think that would be information for the board to understand.
We'll follow up with Bob.
Ms. Snyder, good morning.
Good morning. I have one item this morning that the department requests your consideration of, and that's the change in the limited access control along the MLK Expressway extension along the west side of the extension in the southbound direction within the city of Portsmouth. This change in the limited access endpoint does not allow access to the elevated expressway, only access to the local surface street, Castle Avenue, from the adjacent property. We recommend your approval of this request.
Mr. Mullen.
I make the motion.
Second.
Any discussion or questions? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you.
Thank you.
And this project continues to go along well. The construction of the project has done very, very well.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Mr. Lawson, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. First item I have before you this morning is related to the project to extend the hot lanes from 95 north into 395 toward DC. If you recall, I presented this project to you last month. Had Susan Shaw here from the district present the project. We are working with Transurban as outlined in the comprehensive agreement on the 95 Express to have this project completed, done as through the concessionaire as a concessionaire enhancement. The ask of you today is to provide $5 million in allocations from the Priority Transportation Fund for VDOT and for DRPT to, in essence, develop the project and produce a multimodal study in the corridor and to carry us through December when we expect to be able to complete the agreement with Transurban and move the project forward.
Chairman? Yes, Mr. Garzis.
A little amplification that there was a study done on 395. That's pretty dated at this point, and I think the recommendation from district was that we really needed an updated study. A lot of construction has happened on 395 from the Springfield Mixing Bowl to the 14th Street Bridge. You have the ramifications of possible more sound walls. So that's what this process and this study will look into. I think there's going to be two public hearings, one in Arlington and one in Alexandria, coming up in April to get more input from the public. So that's the impetus behind this request.
John, you got a question?
I did, Mr. Chairman. I'll say I'm very supportive of this project. My question is $5 million for a study. It seems to me we're spending a lot of money on studies. And my question is, was that a bidded amount or is that an estimated amount?
That's a budget amount. It's not a bid.
Why don't you explain what the study is doing and, is it traffic, whatever we're doing?
Yeah, there's several parts here. It's about $1.5 million for the actual study that DRPT will to undertake as it relates to traffic and transit components within the area. And Ms. Mitchell may want to be able to add more to that. But the rest of the $3.5 million estimate is associated with just the legal fees, the traffic and revenue study that we're doing to help position us better as we negotiate the project, and staff time, obviously, to carry this through. So this was the estimate, kind of all inclusive of VDOT efforts, staff, legal, financial services, as well as the transit study, again, that DRPT will undertake.
I think the answer to Mr. Fillon's direct question is probably you're using contractors on call.
That is correct.
Mostly it's on call.
Okay.
I get that. But if I understand right, this money's coming from road building money, potentially road building money, and I understand why VDOT staff why we don't have a budgeted staff for people to do stuff, why we have to allocate money to this project.
At a project level, the engineering, when I say engineering, it's really everything. It's the preliminary work is a better way of describing it. It's not really some of it's engineering, but most is not. Is charged to a specific project. We do not charge, except if we're looking at a program-wide thing. We do have administrative budgets, but all of our project-related costs are charged to a project. As an example, if I'm doing an environmental document on a particular project, I charge to that project, so I have to have a funding source identified. It's not charged to, we don't charge to overhead or administration on any of our projects. There is a small amount of preliminary engineering funds that are, I'll call it, in a bucket at the district level, but that's more for prospecting. What I mean by that is that's for ideas of a project that might come up so that they can do some very basic work. But once we've identified a project, the work, all the work done is charged to the project. Our administrative budget is frankly very small. We just don't charge to it admin.
So did y'all miss me?
No.
Well, the reason I'm asking is because most businesses, we approve a budget for each department ahead of time. And then whatever they have to do within that task, they budget. I mean, they use their budget money. And if we, every project, we've got approved administrative staff at this level, I don't think it makes a lot of sense to me.
I think it's the P3 projects that are more that go through this. It's not the normal project going forward. It's when we're developing negotiations with third parties.
But you know, it's a good business model to track your cost of my project anyways. I would prefer them to track every dime that's going to go into that project.
I don't have any problem doing that. My question is, should the oversight board have to approve every move within the budget?
Typically, you would approve it as part of the six-year plan, and you typically wouldn't approve this small a component of a broad project like this. This project right now does not have funds allocated to it in the six-year plan. The 395 Express Lane project does not have a allocation to it. That's why this PTF money is being allocated to this project.
And we haven't come to you, Mr. Frum, because we're in negotiation with a third party. We're not exactly sure what our contribution is going to be yet.
Well, and I understand, and having said that, if we budget a certain amount for the study, and it sounds like we've agreed to an amount with the contractor that's going to do the study. My two questions. One is that there's always a benefit to paying your own consultant. But the question is this money recoverable in any deal that we do with Transurban or somebody else? And have we asked Transurban to pay some of this?
Well, I'll answer it. The answer potentially is yes, except we want to use our own estimates in negotiating with them.
Right.
Yeah. I understand that. And so that's all tied into what we expected in negotiating the final deal. So to the extent we can get our contribution less, in other words, then indirectly the answer to your question is yes. You see what I'm saying? In other words, I want to make sure that we have the facts when we're negotiating. Mr. Donahue has gone through and has identified general terms. But those terms are, for instance, which discount rate do you use? What's your traffic number? We'll be happy to provide us numbers in that.
Mm-hmm.
It may not be the numbers that we believe.
Well, I understand.
Yes, that's, you know, in other words, that... you know, it's like getting an appraisal. I can hire somebody, you know, to give me an appraisal high or low depending on what I give them the instruction.
Right, but this may ring true to you, Mr. Secretary. So, you know, I've done deals before where the financing company says, we want some consultant reports, and
I agree.
You're going to pay for them.
Yes.
Or we're going to pay for them, you're going to pay for them, but they're going to us. And so I just want to make sure we're not just sort of checking the box and we're doing.
Well taken. I agree, Mr. Braylon. We're not just checking the box, and it's typically in these third parties, or quite frankly, where I have to demand that we have our own data to negotiate from.
Yeah. And generally speaking,
you ever had to pay for a bank's appraisal?
I've had to.
You.
And I've also got a loan too.
Well, it's right above that.
And back to your comment, basically this one and the one before, that $400,000 allocation, typically you are approving as a board the program, the six-year program and the budget. And that's where typically you would approve these, not at this individual level. Again, the uniqueness of this, this project doesn't have an established budget yet. We're in negotiation, but we do have to account for our costs at this point. That's what takes it sort of out of line and highlights both this one and the one before.
Okay. Thank you. Still need a motion here, though.
Motion.
Is there a second?
A second.
Any further discussion or questions? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, Mr. Lawson, next.
Second item I have before you is following up from the presentation I gave you last month related to the next issuance of the capital projects revenue bonds and the CPR bond program. This would be the fifth issuance that we have made. We are looking to sell competitively in probably early May. The sale is limited to $300 million. The resolution you have before you authorizes the sale and authorizes the chairman to carry out all the actions necessary to complete the sale. We have engaged McGuire Woods as bond counsel and Public Resources Advisory Group as financial advisors, and we will be working with the Department of Treasury to complete the sale. Be glad to staff recommends the approval, and we'd be glad to. I'll be glad to take any questions.
And this is just our normal bond issuance based on. This is not additional money. You know, these monies are already programmed, and Mr. Lawson. In fact, we're getting ready to go up to sometime soon up to Wall Street to update our rating agencies. Making sure the funds are available for those projects that have already been programmed. I'll ask, we typically, when I say don't pay attention to interest rates, we do, but it's typically more driven by when we need the monies. Mr. Ross, I haven't seen any reason in interest rates to call it back. Anything keeping our current schedules probably is as good a decision as delaying or anything else.
That's correct. Yeah, we are looking at interest on this issue to probably be around 3.25%.
That's still 20, very historically
25
low
years.
For the issuance of these type of bonds. So, is there a motion?
Motion.
Mr. Casper, second. Mr. Williams. Any other discussion or comments? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Lawson.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Mr. Knight. Yes, sir, you may. Okay, Mr.
One abstention.
Mr. Pitter, good morning.
Good morning, sir, members of the board. We have two items for you, which are rescoping items within our six-year program for already prior approved projects. The first is for the VRE, the Lorton platform work that they're doing. It's $418,000 of money that was programmed for design and engineering, and the request that we're making of y'all is to allow that funding to be reprogrammed to the construction of the platform.
Motion.
Second.
Is there a second? Any discussion? Comments? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Mr. Pitter?
Thank you. The second item we have is related to Alexandria Transit Company, and they have a grant for information technology project that originally they were going to do a garage mapping system, and they've come back and determined they have a higher priority to do a CAD ABL, a computer-aided dispatch automatic vehicle location system, and this is a $300,000 prior award that we're asking the board to allow us to rescope to the computer-aided dispatch ABL system.
Motion.
Second. Yeah, Mr. Fraley.
I know I missed the discussion yesterday, but I watched it on the Virginia Beach Rail, and I don't want to raise that specter again.
We're going to raise it.
But I do want to point out that, all this talk about we don't really know the cost, we never know the cost. We have estimates of the cost, and those change. And sometimes we have to reallocate money to a project. Sometimes we have to reallocate money away from a project because the estimate was too high.
and therefore we've got money to spend elsewhere. And so, you know, I was listening yesterday, and I'm not sure. I think that's a little bit of a red herring, but so just wanted to say that. But this project seems fun.
Marty, did you hear that? I'm going to come back to your comment when we get to bring it up.
Oh, I didn't know we were going to play all that field again.
I could not agree more, because we had a cost when they asked us for the money. I mean, we just didn't pull that out of the air. So anyway, but on this topic, is there any more discussion or comments? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you.
Mr. Kilpatrick.
Okay, this is, as we discussed yesterday, this is regarding the bus rapid transit project in the city of Richmond. There are three things that this resolution does. It authorizes the Commissioner of Highways and the Director of ERPT to enter into the agreement. It's a five-party agreement. DRPT, GRTC, which is the transit operator, Henrico County, and the City of Richmond. And again, this is the project agreement that's outlined. The second thing this does is it authorizes me as Commissioner of Highway to enter into award the design build contract. Again, because even though it is not DDOT funds specifically, code requires that for me to enter into a construction contract greater than $5 million has to be authorized by the board. So again, that's the second piece. And the third is that I will bring back to the board the results of the design build project, the evaluation proposals at the next board meeting, which will be in Lynchburg, for the affirmation of the design build contract award. So it is those three things that this resolution provides.
Brown, is there a motion?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Yes, second.
Any other discussion or comments? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, thank you, Mr. Kilpatrick. Okay, we need to move on this action related to the resolution that we gave an indication on yesterday. Mr., why don't you go through the resolution one more time? I may add some comments. I got some calls last evening.
Okay.
And I want to make sure that when I write the letter to the City of Virginia Beach, that I'm explaining exactly what the board intended by this action.
Okay.
So, Ms. Mitchell.
As we discussed yesterday, we've presented essentially two deadlines for the City of Virginia Beach. Building on the resolution that you all passed at our last meeting, we were adding that a requirement that the city enter into a binding agreement on reimbursement for the light rail vehicles with the Commonwealth by April 30th as well. Should they not meet that deadline, and now that deadline will include both the binding agreement, the MOU.
Why don't you go through the resolution?
Oh,
in other words, just go through, I think that would take us through instead of assuming this is go right to the resolution.
But okay.
The first paragraph and just in
all okay. To read it or just explain?
No, just explain.
Okay,
it,
so the first whereas is, yeah. You know, again, reaffirms that the City of Virginia Beach is the project sponsor for construction and that they have requested funding from the Commonwealth for this project. The second whereas clause states that the city has, or restates, that the city has entered into a grant agreement for $20 million with VDOT for the funds from the Transportation Partnership Opportunity Fund, which were used to purchase the right-of-way for that. Should the city not move forward with its best efforts to complete the project, that grant agreement requires that they will reimburse VDOT for that $20 million. The next whereas clause reaffirms.
Mr. Chairman, I ask a question on that clause.
Yes, you may.
Make sure I understand that. So if they don't sign the memorandum of understanding, they have to pay us $20 million?
If they don't sign by April 30th the memorandum of understanding and enter into the agreement, a binding agreement for cars, which he hasn't got to,
right.
But that is with a notice to proceed. That really doesn't bind them until it's necessary to not meet to meet their schedule. So in other words, their notice, they have to enter the agreement saying we're going to do this, but they don't actually bind themselves to that until they issue a notice to proceed, which will be sometime later this year or early next year. Okay. But yes, to get back to your question, by April 30th, if they do not do those actions, then this resolution says this board will reallocate the monies through House Bill 2.
The grant agreement on the $20 million, though, has...
All right, let me come back to that. Now, the $20 million, the grant agreement does allow us to call that money because it specifically says in there that it's for the extension of light rail. But I would come to the board. I would like to see what Virginia Beach proposes to do if they don't do this with that particular right-of-way. In other words, if it's not for light rail, is it for bus rapid transit, is it for whatever? I think that's why we put this as a whereas instead of a resolve clause.
I understand, Mr. Chairman, but if I understand correctly, yeah, we've spent money and secured right-of-way on this project.
That is correct.
To me, once we secure money and take people's property, even if it's the railroad, I mean, I don't know who.
It was railroad property. There was no housing involved in that acquisition.
But it could have been. You know, and that's the problem with revisiting these projects over and over and over again. So I just want to point that out, and I don't know why, unless we have some interest in this right away, which we may, I don't know. But if we don't, I don't know why we would enter into negotiations.
Oh, I'm not saying negotiations. I'd say, when you say negotiations over the right away.
Over the $20 million they have to pay?
Yeah, I understand.
They can have the right away and do something with it if they want.
That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct. Yes, correct. But I think we have an interest in the right of way because of this grant agreement. All I'm suggesting is there might be. To answer your specific question, yes, we have the right to call the money. Whether that's what the board chooses to do, I would only say, you know, I would give Virginia Beach to say what else they're going to do with it. I'm not suggesting we'd agree with it. But we have the right to call that money.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, Ms.
No, it's okay. I was just going to say, I think the way that the grant agreement's worded is that it gives VDOT the ability to determine whether or not they believe whether the city is continuing with its best efforts to advance the light rail extension. And then I think it says the city has 120 days, I believe, and I'm kind of looking at Rick Walton, but the point is that it's not tied to these dates necessarily. It's just that there is a process in that grant agreement for the city or for the state to call that should they decide.
Yeah, if VDOT informs us, since they're the party to it, and I guess we would have that they are no longer using their best efforts to advance light rail.
The next whereas clause just reaffirms the language from the February resolution, which established the April 30th deadline for the city entering into an MOU and also authorizing HRT to move forward with the vehicle purchase. So the resolution clause requires that the city enter into a binding agreement with the state for light rail vehicles by April 30th, and that agreement include a notice to proceed date that would allow the vehicles to be bought at a time that can keep the December 2019 opening date. There's been some discussion by the city based on new information they've received from the vehicle manufacturer that they may be able to push out the actual notice to proceed for that. But our concern here is that A, they enter into a binding agreement, and B, they issue a notice to proceed at a time that allows them to hold the schedule. So that's what this resolution specifies here. And then the next one states that in the absence of those actions, and also that the city has to issue a request for proposals for a design build contract by December 31st, should they not do that, the board may also at that time choose to deobligate any funds programmed to the project and reallocate them to other projects. And the final resolution restates that should the CTB end up deobligating these funds, the city would still be eligible to apply for those funds or to apply for funding for the project through the House Bill 2 process.
Just one correction. It says shall deobligate, doesn't say may.
I believe that was intentional.
I know, that's what I'm saying.
But the resolution says shall be obligate the monies if they're not in a procurement. So I just wanted to make that clear. It wasn't an option. We had put that in the resolution shall.
Mr. Chairman, have you received some feedback from this resolution that...
And it was related to the standpoint of understanding exactly what the CTB has done. I think this speaks for itself, but let me paraphrase it maybe in terms of their schedule and from their point of view. The first two again are back to that we're making them recognize that we have purchased the right of way, and in that agreement, they stated that the purchase was for using their best efforts to move forward with light rail. In that, that was done in 2000. I think actually signed in 2010. Since then, they had a referendum in 2012, and in 2014, they asked us to move the process forward by eliminating the federal process and putting the state funds on the project, and we won't go into all, but that's what we did. So through now, they have been using their best efforts to move that forward. What caused this conversation, as you recall, the last time we met, was a letter sent to me and discussions about a potential referendum, either one imposed on them through signatures by the city treasurer, and whether Mr. Mama, we don't know for sure if he's gotten the signatures, but he says he does. And also the city council was contemplating adopting it on their own. In that discussion, I was sent a letter by the chairman of House Transportation, Mr. Villanueva, asking me what my position and recommendation to you would be if there was a referendum, to which I said that I would interpret that as a loss of political will, and therefore free to have it, but they're not ready to move forward with this project, and therefore I would recommend we would look at deobligating the funds in that regard. Nothing to do with whether or not they wanted to have a referendum other than the fact that I thought it was a loss of political will, and this clearly says use all efforts to move forward in that. We came to you and with that last month, and you put the resolution saying we choose to do a couple of things to give the commitment to move forward, which the next resolution says, in addition, now put a binding an MOU together, which Ms. Mitchell has been working with them. It's been she's been encouraging them to get that, but there is a draft MOU out there. It's non-binding, but it does lay out what the responsibilities of the parties are. Also, this resolution would require them to enter into a binding agreement to move forward with the purchase of the light rail vehicles, which in the original schedules had a long lead time, needing to be done around now or before. But as Ms. Mitchell has reported, subsequently to that, in the contract or in the negotiation with the contractor, they have found that that lead time has been reduced. So what you put in this resolution is saying, okay, you've got to enter the binding agreement by April 30th, but the notice to proceed where you're binding, where you're totally obligating yourself and the state monies, is a date at which you won't miss the opening of light rail. So in other words, the last thing we saw was December 31st of this year, although at the briefing last night, I'm told they were told they could do this as late as April of 17. You know, whatever they need to do to make sure that we don't push the schedule back of the opening of 2019. So the two things that they would have to do by April 30th, in effect, show commitment, but are, even though one is bonding, it has not a lot of teeth until they have to order the cars. But at least they have to, that MOU, if they sign the MOU and do that agreement, subject to Ms. Mitchell making sure that the state's covered in, as we go forward, then what we're saying in this is that those monies would remain in the six-year plan as of June of this year, for them to continue moving forward with the schedule. The next resolve in here was looking at the schedule.
and also contemplating whether they have a referendum or not, which is going to be in November. And back to your question, Mr. Brown, about cost, they keep saying they don't have enough to make a decision on. This year, in October, their schedule calls for the design contract, the HRT, who's working together on putting together the design, he'd be at 30% so they can actually go to market in October of this year. They will have what they need to go to an actual RFP. They call for that RFP going out sometime in October or November. I suspect it won't go out practically until after the November election based on, you know, with this referendum. But because of our fiduciary responsibility of not wanting to wait to see, you know, are we really moving forward or not, what the board has chosen to say is if you have not issued an RFP, which your schedule says you should issue well into before December 31st, but as of December 31st, if you have not issued that, that would also be a sign that you are not willing to move forward on this. And then we will deobligate the monies. That's what the resolution says. From the council's perspective, what this, I believe, does is that they're not obligated to spend anything if they don't go forward by December 31st because their notice to proceed on the cars will be outside of that window. I suspect they're not going to do that until they know if they're going to issue the RFP. But they will have documented and are moving forward under their schedule, which Mr. Malvin had pointed out, their schedule, that they have entered into an agreement to keep us on schedule. Now, what this also does, it means that if Virginia Beach City Council, it's totally now with this resolution, the decision totally rests with them. If they choose not to sign these agreements by April 30th, that's their decision. And the monies will be deobligated in June. If they do sign those and they subsequently decide not to go to RFP in December, the monies will be deobligated. But what I have seen this board do is put this squarely on the city council, which, you know, quite frankly, I've been saying very publicly that this rests, their actions rest with them. It is not a financial restriction on them because their schedule, they will have a chance to do their referendum, public, whatever they need to do. It simply means if they don't have the political will to go forward now, they won't sign the contracts because they're not putting a financial burden on them until they get the information they need. Or if after the referendum or sometime in the future they decide not to go forward, then again, that would be their decision by issuing the RFP. What this means to us is that we basically have not missed any opportunity to program those monies because within 6 months, I'd come back to you in addition to what you approve in May with the additional projects that could be funded with these money. We'd make a recommendation you could vote in in January of next year. So, unless I misunderstood your intentions, that's the way I see this working. Is that what you believe and understand the restrictions you put on the council and the way I've explained it?
Yeah, and certainly conveys what was discussed yesterday and from the rail committee as well when we were kind of designing the resolution. So the first, the first line of demarcation would be April 30th. And if the memorandum of understanding is not signed and the binding agreement for the cars is not signed, then we know that we can go ahead and deobligate the money.
Because it just shall deobligate the money here.
Right.
Yeah.
We shall. That's the first line, and then in December, if they do proceed with those two documents, in December, if they sign the notice to proceed, then that does obligate them to with procurement for the cars. If they do not, that is the other option.
Well, on the RFP for the actual construction grant,
which
for
would
the
be
price.
A financial commitment
to
on their
part.
Chairman, who's out the cash for?
Hold on for a sec. Mr. Bell, and then I'll come around.
I got a bunch you might want to go to. But the first thing is, so when do we get our $20 million back? If they don't do the RFP in December,
If we do the RFP in December, that would mean they're not moving forward. That would be the latest they've been under here, and that the board would have the ability to request $20 million.
Do they understand that, Virginia Beach City Council?
We have put that in every resolve, and I have, I have pointed out, I have pointed out that provision. I have not specifically said what our actions would be, but I think at the last meeting and at this meeting, they got a pretty good indication of where the board was on that.
Is it true that they raised taxes to pay for this?
It is true that they have raised taxes. They have not, that was when that vote was taken, it said we still have to take another vote to actually spend it on this project. But they have raised taxes.
Are they planning on issuing refunds to everybody that's paid this tax?
Mr. Fallon, I cannot answer that question.
I would doubt that.
I would too. Well, you know, in this, people may wonder why this guy from Roanoke is getting involved with this and asking these relatively tough questions. And the reason is because the amount of money allocated to this project could have a significant impact across the state. And it is outside of the House Bill 2 process because of when it was started.
That's correct.
But I hope that we, in the future, when we're looking at House Bill 2 processes, that we enter contracts that we intend to enforce and that localities know we intend to enforce. And I suspect that if we don't enforce our contracts, localities, if they think they can go and politically do this and get somebody to enter in a bill and somebody to do this other stuff, I mean, they all do that. It's all legal. There's nothing illegal about it. But it shakes the confidence of everybody else in the state. And so I think that's
really important. I made the comment yesterday, I hope you heard, I think that is the real benefit of the House Bill 2 process. And I apologize to this board for not making it through there, because a part of it was they would have developed the project and did it. We relied upon them. And that's what would happen if it goes back. But I agree. I could not agree with you more.
Well, and I want to encourage everybody on the board to remember, we are supposed to be above this political fray. That's the whole reason that the legislature or city councils don't allocate the money that's collected from the taxpayers. And so we have that fiduciary responsibility. Political opinion changes, political representatives change. If you're looking at a multi-year project and we are going to renegotiate every time the political culture changes, we're never going to get a project done. And so the only alternative I see is to ask for money up front from localities. And that's not palatable. They don't want to do that. They don't want to do that either. Those are the points I want to make, and I'm sorry I wasn't here yesterday to make them. Thank you.
Mr. Grozinski, and then I'll come over to Mr.
My only question is if we come to the April 30th deadline and there is no action, what exactly happens to the deallocated funds?
What we would do is submit to you, it would go back into House Bill 2. Technically 45% would go to a state of good repair, and then 27.5% to the statewide and to the district pies.
Mr. Chair, wouldn't it go, it's not going back to rail funds?
This was not rail money. It was flat money.
There are some implications yes. to the, well, to the scoring and project.
That is, there would be more money available. This board could choose to do something else with it. In other words, the board could choose to say we'd like to do something else, but that would be, absent any action by the board, how it would flow back through.
Thank you.
And that's $155 million, right?
Yeah. Yes, $155 million. So roughly $75 million in state of good repair and $80 million would go through the two. That's probably not exactly.
John, the sharks aren't swimming.
They're getting ready.
But I just point out, and quite frankly, we may offer suggestion over the budget. We are looking at 66 inside the beltway. There's other projects we might say to go, but we may offer other suggestions.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Right.
Mr. Chairman, if I could make one more point.
New money.
In light of the discussion,
All right, order, Governor Gossie.
In light of the discussion yesterday about carrying money over, which I assume we're going to get to in another meeting.
Yes, sir.
It may behoove us, if we do reallocate this money, to put that in the next year. And I'm an advocate of that. I know that there were other people that said, well, we've got a duty to spend the money. The problem is next year we're going to have a whole lot less money to spend.
Yep, that's true.
And so to the extent we can do that, we could do that. I also wanted to correct you a little bit. You said $155 million. I'm looking at $175
million. Yeah, that is correct. You have the ability to pull that $20 million back. That's correct.
Thank you.
Mr.
Bruce.
Rosen, yeah. You got me excited here.
You call me Mr. Williams. Thank you. Just to make sure I understand, the binding agreement you mentioned may not have a lot of teeth.
Based on the notice to proceed.
Right.
That's right.
So they sign that. Wait until the referendum. Issue an RFP by December 31st. But then decide in March or April of 2017 to pull the RFP.
Then we would immediately, it would be in the June time frame, we'd put those in, that would fall in the next year, and we would put those through the $175 million through next year.
And I guess I say that just to make sure I understand, and maybe everyone else did, that potentially we are putting that money aside not until December 31st, but rather until April of next year. So 13 yeah. months. We could be putting that aside. Now, granted, the cycle doesn't start for the next funding until we vote in June, but I mean, it's a longer process because the council would always have the opportunity to just pull the RFP back.
And I'm not going to go back to Mr. Fudd, while we put in here that they are the procuring entity, I mean, they control what that cost is by the scope. I mean, it's their construction, and that's why I think I agree is a little bit of a red herring. That it would cost it, well, then rescope the project or what have you in that. But Ms. Rosen, you're right. I've looked at the opportunity cost to us by this is we would not have allocated the monies until June of this year, right? Because we'd be going through this process we're in because of the process we went through House Bill 2. So that's why I suggested that December we'd be 6 months, but you're right. At the outset, we're looking at a year lost opportunity on the monies. That's really what this agreement, from our perspective, CTB and allocation, that's what we've lost. And Mr. Grundy made the last time point, even though they've had it a couple of years, no skin in the game, you're right, because if it had been a line of credit with the bank, they'd have been paying some percentage point to have that out there. But in terms of what we've actually lost, that's what we're, by going down this path, it could be as much as a 12-month opportunity cost of using the money.
And I would suspect that if this project, I don't know, but the denominator is pretty high on it, that if it went through HB2, just given what I've looked at on this morning, it may not.
Not sure. I don't want to prejudge it because if you look at the parts, if you look at Hampton Roads, even though 45% of its score is congestion mitigation, and there's, Mr. Baldwin and I were talking, we never said this was going to be a huge congestion mitigation right now, in the future potentially. But once you get outside the interstates in Hampton Roads, economic development and land use are what drives the projects. It's only on the interstate. Now, that's not true in Northern Virginia, but it is true in Hampton Roads. So I don't know. Now, whether or not they would choose to use regional monies, I'm just not sure how it would. Statewide, you might be right. I don't know how it would do district-wide because it will score well on those two things and probably energy and probably safety. So it probably will get pretty good scores on everything else. So I just don't know.
Last question. The April date, pushing out the car procurement until April, would that, do you believe that would be an additional, we talked about $500,000 for kind of a rush order, do you believe that pushing it out even further from December to April is going to be an additional rush cost?
I would assume so, that they're getting a quote from the manufacturer on what it would cost or what the additional cost would be if they were to push that out. So I know the City Council requested that of HRT last night.
Okay.
So that doesn't, we don't have that.
Well, I would just encourage us, as we said, the opportunity cost, basically putting it out until April of 2017, the procurement, any excess cost in the cars, I think, should be borne by the city council.
And that's one of the things Ms. Mitchell has made clear in the negotiations in that regard.
Thank you.
Mr. Williams?
Just one final point for me. It's really some suggestion for Mr. Malvern to let him know that I can see the money flying out of the district now. Flying out of the community and the district, because the sharks are all in the tank and they're all divvying it up already. So that's $175 million. You're probably not going to be fortunate enough to get an intersection improvement project to go along with. Did up in Charlottesville, spend all the money. The money's going to leave.
Let me point out, though, because I mean, this kind of, we put the last resolve in here. This does not mean it's the end of the project. And Ms. Valentine brought this up yesterday. They can come back and go through the House Bill 2 project, and I would tell you the McAuliffe administration will remain supportive because we think it's a good project. I don't know how it's going to score. I don't know how it's going to fall
apart. But you've deallocated money that's already there.
That's right. Yeah, but it would have, and again, that's what brought us here. They asked us to get out of that process, take the process of federal, replace the federal dollars. Because normally, and Ms. Mitchell, correct me if I'm wrong on this, normally these projects, and it was the way with Norfolk Light Rail, it's roughly 50% federal, 25% locality, 25% state. I'm rounding off, but that's roughly. They ask us, Virginia Beach, to take a lot of the federal share to move this project forward. And Governor McAuliffe campaigned on it, supportive of it, although I will tell you, he has been very clear in his messaging. You're not going to use it, we want to use it somewhere else. But nonetheless, that was the agreement. They took Ms. Mitchell and Deputy Secretary Donahue up in helicopters and said, this is why we can do it. We're going to save all this money by pushing the procurement forward. I mean, they made the case. I mean, so I agree with, although I think House Bill 2 actually, I think that's the real benefit of not just the scoring, it's developing it, and they understand the whole bit. But they made the case. It's in their planning. It's in that. So we didn't just take their word. Mr. Melvin was saying they've been working on these plans for 15 years that show this in there.
If I can interject, I want to emphasize what Aubrey said. If we adopt this resolution, it's clearly up to Virginia Beach if they want this project to move forward. And I've read some little blurbs here and there that the state is kind of pushing this project down Virginia Beach's throat. That is totally incorrect. Virginia Beach came to the state and adopted and asked for help on putting this mobility spine through an area they've been studying for 8 years, and the council has voted on 11 times that this is the type of growth that we want on this corridor. And that the state has bent over backward to facilitate this project, to contribute to the extent to make it a reality. And I'm very pleased with the resolution. I appreciate the cooperation. And I understand the sharks where they are. I'd be there too. But it's totally up to the city of Virginia Beach. And some of the delay they say is because of we don't know the cost. And there's some merit to that, because the original cost was $310 million, and that was under the NEPA process. But we built the first section for $43 million with huge cost overruns and issues, and we had an unsolicited offer for $50 million a mile. So obviously there's a cost question that needs to be resolved, and we can't resolve it until we get 30% drawings and really go to market. I agree that this process is not interrupting the process. I would be the first one to pull my support if they paused or delayed or didn't move this project forward because they had to re-examine their political will or commitment to the project. This proposal allows everything to continue in the process. And also gives them the option, once they get some solid costs, if they think the project is unreasonable or too expensive, that they have an option. So I think it's good on both sides. People have to make a commitment on both sides. The state has obviously made their commitment, and it's up to Virginia Beach to fulfill the requirements, and I think it's totally reasonable. That's the end of my...
Okay, well, is there any more comment? Oh, Ms. Thompson.
Just a quick comment on the resolution before us. It does say that under the action that it was, the motion was carried unanimously. While that may be accurate, we may want to correct that for the...
Okay,
we'll
make
sure
for the record.
Well,
we did
have a
pulling
language from
the
trial.
Oh,
really?
Yeah,
yeah,
we were.
It was.
Just thought it was
sense of the board.
Sense.
Yeah. Just trying to give them an indication so they would have. And well, he was trying to help, but based on some of the calls, I'm not sure that they understood or. Maybe they were looking for us to make the decision for them, but I want to make it clear that what this does is if Virginia Beach does not, well, this project goes forward or not is totally within the City Council's decision.
Mr. Chairman, I had a technical question if I could before we
yes,
close
sir.
It out. Siemens is a big company, so when we enter into a contract with them, what are the cancellation penalties if and who pays them, and is the state held harmless?
Ms. Mitchell, why don't you?
That's one of the things that we intend to get into the binding agreement we would have with the City of Virginia Beach. The in this case, HRT would actually have the contract with Siemens, but we would be the ones that have the grant agreement with HRT. That's why we need a binding agreement where the city has to reimburse the state for 50% of the vehicle cost. So we, in that agreement, intend to put something in there that says that should the city decide to cancel the contract and there's any penalties or, you know, they would be responsible for covering those 100%. We may also consider asking them to reimburse the state for any funds that we've expended on the vehicles should they decide not to move forward with the project.
So that's a separate agreement from the memorandum of understanding.
That's correct.
Yeah.
It's the binding agreement, but it doesn't have real teeth until they issue the notice to proceed.
Thank you.
Any other discussion on this before we, if not, I'll ask Mr. Malvin for a motion.
I'll make the motion.
Second. Any other discussion or comments? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, thank you very much, and we'll get that letter out. And I think it's pretty clear from where we're headed here. No more discussion here. Either they do this or they don't. And we'll know how to move forward from that. Okay, is there, I think, this screen went blank.
Right there.
Okay.
Schedule.
Slide to unlock.
And there you go.
Okay, oh, we have this coming up. So, good morning.
Morning, Chairman, members of the board. I bring before you 10 items for your consideration this morning. We'll go through them.
I think we'll do them individually.
Yes, sir.
The board tends to do that, yes.
I-65's first project is a concrete patching project on I-85 in Richmond District, Dinwiddie County. Two competitors on the project. We find that the bid received were favorable and recommend award.
Let me make sure I'm on the right.
I-65.
I-65, and this is in
Richmond District,
and Mr.
Brown. I-85.
Order number I-65, right?
Yeah, it's on Interstate I-85 in the Richmond District.
Mr. Williams, is there a motion?
Yeah, let me read these emails. Award.
Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Okay. Order number J-12. This is a bridge rehabilitation project on Interstate 81. It's six bridges in the Salem District. We have three competitors for the project, and we find that the bids received a favorable and recommended award.
Before Mr. Fallon asks the question, Mr. Kilpatrick, will you explain why it's $3 million over?
Yes, sir, I will. And if you go to this is a series of bridge repair projects and approach work. One of the things that drove the cost up of this was the high cost of the approach asphalt. It's in small bits and pieces. As you know, as you redeck a bridge, you need to make a smooth transition. So the asphalt cost was well above what we put in the estimate. This is being using maintenance funds and within the available funds in maintenance. This is one of the things we're going to go back and look at, a couple things, whether or not we should incorporate this approach of paving in this contract, or we should take it out of this contract and put it into a regular paving schedule. Because it's a design bid build, we have the ability to add and delete items in the contract. That's one of the things that we are looking at. If we have if we don't have an available resource to do the paving work, then we would use this. But again, this is one of these where it's a very small million paving operations on the interstate, so the cost of mobilization in some cases may be higher than the asphalt itself.
Ms. Phelan, is there a motion?
So moved.
Second. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
So can I brag on the next one?
Since yeah, there you go.
Since we're $5 million under on the next one.
Maybe Mr. Frey could talk him into getting that money.
Yeah.
I'm not tangling with him. That's right.
The next project is order number 106. This is a plant mix schedule work in Bristol District. We had two competitors. We believe that the bids received represent a good value for the department. We recommend award.
Mr. Mack,
so moved.
Is there a second? Any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Okay. Order number 108 is, again, plant mix schedule work in Bristol District. One competitor. We believe that the bid received represents good value to the department and the state and recommend award.
Ms. Mack.
So moved.
Second. Any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
It's Bristol.
All right. All right.
Next one is order number 310. Again, plant mix schedule work in Lynchburg District. Two competitors. Again, we believe that the bid received represents good value to the state. Recommend award.
I move.
Ms. Dalton. Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion?
Did Ms. Valentine make that motion?
She did.
Ms. Valentine, did you make that motion?
I did.
Well, yes.
You're
trying to get some chips in.
I know.
You're going to hear about this later.
I know we're going to show time.
I know, that's right.
This is a three.
is there any other discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay.
Next is order number 608. Again, plant mix schedule work in Fredericksburg District. Two bidders. We believe that the low bid received represents good value to the state and recommend award.
Mr. Connors, come on. Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion or comments? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right.
Order number 918. Again, plant mix schedule work in Northern Virginia. Three offers on this project. We believe that the low bid received represents good value to the department. Recommend award.
Motion.
Second.
Mr. Chairman, I have to abstain on this.
All right. Melvin Exchange. We have seconded. Motion. Is there any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed.
Next is order number I-39. This is in the Bristol District, widened three lanes along Route 757 at the intersection of Route 23. We had seven offers. We believe that the low bid represents good value to the state and recommend award.
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any other discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Next is order number I-53. This is an intersection improvement project to Route 620 and Route 1 in Fredericksburg District. We have two offers on the project. We believe that the low bid represents a good value to the state and recommend award.
Mr. Connors.
Can you explain the bid amount versus the estimated construction cost?
This estimated construction cost was the planning estimate In actuality, the building demo cost associated with this project, is there were a number of buildings taken with this project, were higher than we had anticipated. However, in the planning estimate, the bid amount was only slightly higher than our value of estimate.
And this is, you and I are both familiar with this location. It's a nasty intersection. It's a tough spot to work. I'm actually not surprised in two things. You didn't have a ton of bidders, and also the bid prices. This is a, like I said, it's a tough spot. It's on US 1 and kind of right outside of Fredericksburg, and just a lot going on at this intersection, and it's pretty heavily used.
I move to approve.
Second.
Any other discussion?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Mr. Farrell.
May I ask a question on this? This is nothing to do specifically with this one, but all right, so we're about $1 million over.
Yes.
Where's that $1 million come from?
I'm not aware of what the specific funding sources are for this project. I think there's some RSVP. Again, Kim, do you know what the funding source is? She can find it here pretty quick.
Mr. Farrell, I think in our district there's surpluses at some projects that get transferred.
What should be happening is this.
All would be revealed on the next bid.
Yeah.
Again, in terms of the funding resources, it's either within the allocation, and it may just be that it's not reflected the overall 6-year plan allocation, but Kent's going to check here.
But I remember when I was CTB member that I had overages and underages that I had to approve.
You have to approve transfer.
Transfers, but I mean, but typically I was reported to whether or not we were having issues in terms of the total in there. And I was able to transfer it from one to another. So I don't know if that's still the case
in more than
two. Yeah, but this may not have even required a transfer, so
that's what I want.
It didn't come from the Salem district. I'm pretty confident of that.
That's not what I'm thinking about.
Yeah.
All right. Well, so, can we go? Okay. Mr. Brown, can you?
Can we pass this by for a second and then go to the next one?
We can pass this by. We can.
We'll just pass this by.
Let's go to the next.
She's got it.
Okay.
The PE and right-of-way on the project actually has come in less than anticipated, so the budget has been adjusted so that the construction cost is covered by the surplus from PE and right-of-way.
So there were no transfers to this project necessary.
Correct.
It's within the original project budget.
Right.
Okay. I don't like the answer, but I understand it. It's appropriate.
Yeah. Do you want to pass it by?
I'm ready.
All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay.
And the last project for your consideration is order number I-43. This is 10th Street Road and Interstate Improvements in the Salem District in the City of Roanoke. We have 3 offers on this project. We believe that the low bid received represents a good value to the state and recommend award.
Okay, this one's over. So, Mr. Fraley.
May I ask a question before I make a motion?
Sure.
This is an overage.
Sir.
Where is this money going to be made up?
This funding on this is predominantly local funds, bonds, formula, money.
I'm happy to answer that because I've been dealing with this. The city's going to pay, and I just want to say that it was interesting. You said you represents a good value to the state. That's correct. It actually represents a bad value to the city, who needs the project done, has been working on it for decades. And something I've been talking to Quentin about, I think where Mr. Fralin's going is it would be good if VDOT found the money, and we're working with the district folks to cover this, because if you're in a county, you don't have to do that. VDOT manages the overage.
What effect, this is a phased project, and it's contemplated phase 2s to be funded under House Bill 2 for this next 6-year cycle, and that's not been determined yet. Is there any way to get some contingency money from that to put on this? No. Yeah, because there's a estimate amount, right?
This came up last night in a different conversation. You certainly can recommend that you would like to put monies on a project. You, as you may certainly do that. In other words, we came up in another, in a sort of a reverse way last night about the conversation, Mr. Phelan, about whether or not we should spend all the money. One of the things I suggested to Mr. Williams, and I don't know if I talked to everybody, is we wanted to keep to the penny the integrity of every the district pot and the overall state pot. Without the district, I'll use you had $70 million, you got to $65 million, and your next project was $10 million, you didn't have enough to do it. What you certainly could do is pick the next project in your district and put $5 million on it, make the commitment the next time there was scoring, that got funded fully before you used FP2 monies on other stuff.
Okay, that's a whole other discussion.
I understand, but I'm pointing out is
how do you do that before it gets ranked against the project the next year?
It's been ranked. You have to just I understand it, but you stand up and say the law doesn't require you. It says you must use the rank. You have, but to answer your question, the reason I said that is because you have the ability if you want to move money to make that suggestion.
But this is a pre-House Bill 2 project.
Yeah, Kim can give the breakdown of the funding.
This particular project was not submitted for House Bill 2. It was phase 2 of this project that was submitted for consideration.
Right.
So I'm not sure that we could take House Bill 2 funding and allocate it to this project since it wasn't submitted or scored.
What is the funding source for this project?
It has a lot of different kinds of formula funding on it, local funds, and also revenue sharing. It's been around for a long time. It's UPC 709.
709, okay, so that changed. So let me ask you, it's been dozens of years on this project. The deficit is how much?
About 2.5, I believe.
1.8.
Yeah.
We're going to pull a full call.
Sure.
And I assume that this is basically it's not just simply the contract award, we're trying to cover the contingency also?
Correct. Yes,
okay.
But we've already reduced the contingency from 10 to 5.
So,
Well, there's 600,000 contingency right now.
And what's the deficit?
1.73 or 1.7.
Okay.
700.
So, assuming no contingency, there's still a little over a million deficit.
About $1,070,000.
And does the city of Roanoke have any old urban formula that's unallocated, or you know that question?
We could certainly help them look for that.
The district administrator and Tommy are looking right now to see if they can find it. I think the issue is there's some leftover money, but it's federal money, and for a number of reasons, this project was not to make the development easier on it. Federal money wasn't applied for. So
what we can commit to is to continue to work on that issue and provide options for this deficit. In terms of awarding the contract, we have to ensure there's a commitment to fund it as it stands today. One of the things that we are trying to scrub as we go through the entire program are old urban and old secondary allocations. A change in the code now basically provides more flexibility in those dollars, and I don't see Nick in here, but I believe it also provides flexibility with old primary allocation dollars. Is 10th Street a primary or is it a secondary? Well,
it's urban.
Does it have a primary route number? I don't know whether it does or does not.
Probably.
I don't know enough about it. Is 10th Street route 2-something or 3-something? Or
no, it doesn't have a route number.
Okay. What we do is go back and look and scrub to see if there's unused urban. The simplest thing would be on a project like this would be an uncommitted or a leftover urban allocation that could be reprogrammed to the project. That I don't know whether that's possible or not, but the commitment we can make today is we'll continue to explore the option. The challenge is putting I'll call it new money on that. The new money that's out there really goes through the House Bill 2 process unless Does Roanoke receive CMAQ or RSTP? They do not receive RSTP, is that correct?
This project is not federally eligible.
Not federally eligible.
Okay. That's the other correct. I think we've taken enough time for the whole board to deal with this one project. But so I would move we issue the bid. And I believe the city's will pay the money. It's just a matter of do they have to. So I'm and no more time. It's a matter of pulling money from something else and covering the difference. Something that is needed, like another bridge. So,
I mean, have you all considered a referendum?
I'm going to do that before I leave town.
All right. Is there a second? Mr. Rose?
Second.
Oh, Mr. Wave, okay. Second. Any other discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
May I make just a comment about this? I don't intend this to be funny at all, but, the bids that came out of the Salem district were both over. And so, the estimated cost did not quite cover what the project actually, the expenditures actually were. And so is that ever an issue, in certain districts, do you find that the estimated costs don't really reflect what the actual costs tend to be? I just haven't looked at it long enough. I just noticed that the Salem district
there are,
today.
I will say that the estimating is both science and art in terms of, because you're trying to anticipate until you receive hard bids. We're pretty good at our estimating, but in terms of nailing it down, you don't know what the cost of the project is ultimately until the books are closed.
Where are you doing those cost estimates? Here in the district?
These estimates typically are done in the district. They are, and some of this is bad quality, frankly, as we move forward. I think that what you're going to find with the House Bill 2 in the good repair process, if you remember, projects once the budget is approved, what you're going to do is approve the budget for individual projects. If we cannot deliver that project within that budget, there's some scale. We have that the project has to come back for reapproval by the board. There has been a tendency to allow for project creep for various reasons. Estimates tend to be, we have a process of updating estimates, but even some of those are not updated as often as they should or as accurately as they should. But part of what House Bill 2 is going to drive us is to, I'll call it budget management, that we're going to have to say, look, that's all the money there is to fix this problem. And we may say, others may say, well, gosh, we'd like to add this turn lane, or we'd like to add this additional piece of roadway, or this extra bridge, or this extra something. We may have to say, no, we can't do that. We've scored this project, and the reason we're delivering it is because of this, and we just don't have the funds to add on. I want you to think that's a hard line, because there may be great reasons to come back to the board and say, we need to rebudget this project, but it may require that project to be rescored also in the future.
Just an observation.
Okay.
I was just reflecting on sales. This was too easy to set up.
We've left Mr. Couples, so now you all can continue on. All right. There is one new piece of business to come before us, and this is the resolution that I spoke with you about at the beginning regarding the WMATA situation. Now, where is this on their iPads? This is what is proposed that we allow Ms. Mitchell to do this if, in fact, we deem it necessary. Is there any questions about, I know you just got it, take a minute, is there any questions about the actual resolution?
So this would be if it's extended beyond the
time
frame.
I could have put in here, we could add in here that upon my approval as your chairman, and maybe that's the appropriate way, instead of delegating it directly to Ms. to Mitchell. that way you'll have another check to hold me accountable. So, but I'm okay with it this way too. So whatever y'all do is appropriate. Yeah, Mr. Yates.
I'd like to see a cap on
it. Ms. Mitchell's not yet.
It's
the cap. $2 million.
Okay.
Is there in there anywhere? I don't see the cap in there.
No.
Okay. No. So let's put up to $2 million.
Okay.
And that, I think that would take care of whether or not I'm in there. So we'll add that in there, $2 million. Mrs. Patak.
And just to clarify, it's for if the closure extends beyond the stated.
That's correct. If there is an extended
so
closure.
Not for expenses that may have occurred today.
No.
Normal operating expenses today.
That's
or
right.
Not. Okay.
If there is a. Yes, Mr.
And there was one other change that I think is on the board of special credit that I think the director wanted to add that it expires 60 days.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yes.
Okay.
I think it's on the one on the system. But with those caveats, we would say limit of $2 million, and this expires in 60 days. Is there anything else you'd like to add into this? Ms. Braylon?
Mr. Chairman, this is coming out of the total six-year improvement plan, not District 8's money. True?
I think that's correct, yes.
Okay. I don't have any problem with that. I mean, I think this is an emergency that affects the whole state, but I think that point needs to be made. And
Mr. Chairman, there's only certain revenue sources that could be used for this.
Okay.
So this isn't going to come out of, for example, the district grant funds or the hybrid private funds.
Okay. But Mr. Chairman, what are those funds that could be used?
The congestion mitigation quality fund. Or the transit operating budget reserve. We have been going through the Appropriations Act to determine whether or not we have the authority to use that reserve, which is $2 million. If we don't, then it will likely have to come out of CMAQ funds.
Right.
We'll have to do some reshuffling to make that work. But if there's only certain.
Do CMAQ funds are spent across the state?
CMAQ funds cannot be spent in the Northern Regions if they're not in non-payment areas.
Other areas of the state?
In other areas of the state.
North Virginia, Richmond, and Hampton Roads are the areas that receive.
That's my only point,
yeah.
And this is a problem, and to tell you the truth, we probably ought to have some. I agree with the cap, by the way, but we ought to have some ability for the governor, or I don't know if he could declare a state of emergency. There's certain funds available, so anyway.
I think that's covered. If there is a state of emergency, that gives some authority to me and the agency.
I think there's one up there today.
Yeah. Governor is, as we speak, I think, is leaving on a going to overseas for 5 days with the governor. So,
okay.
So, all right. So, can we have a motion? And with the two amendments that we talked about. And there's a second. Is there any? You're okay, Ms. Mathis? Any other discussion on this? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. We'll monitor it. I hope we don't need this, but I don't know what's going to come out of it, and I'd like to be proactive. That's all the business on the agenda. Is there any member that has any new business like to bring up?
Mr. Chairman, Nick has invited the subcommittee that's going to study the allocation process. Going on his honeymoon with him.
Oh, he has.
Spend those 2 weeks. So we come back and have a new resolution.
Mr. Donahue, did you do that, Mr. Donahue? Mr. Williams said you've invited the subcommittee to go on your honeymoon with you.
I did not.
Okay.
But he will get that together in that. Mr. Yeah. Yes.
Don't let William be on it.
I'm just going who is on it?
Only Northern Virginia.
That was my question, just to clarify what's happening next.
All right, so it's anybody who would like to participate.
Exception house.
And so,
who's agreed?
I left yesterday
anybody who wanted to participate. Mr. Arnie, this has changed. We're going to give a date when he's available, and anybody who wanted to come can come.
Yeah, let's go.
And Mr. Chairman, I think the thing staff need to effectuate this meeting to make it effective for the board members, as I requested yesterday, Mr. Connors has already sent an email. I need communication on an individual basis from each of you identifying your top things that are problematic or that you're supportive of in between those two scenarios, that as staff, when we try and work through this, we understand how to modify either of the scenarios or create a new one that best meets the majority of the board's kind of problems, concerns, or areas of support within this. We did not list members that could participate in this. I was going to coordinate with Ms. Mathis to try and have something made available in the first 2 weeks during April. Mr. Walton did inform me yesterday that should we do this, one or two members can call in, but a quorum of whether it's a subcommittee or the full board, depending on how we notice this meeting, must be physically present in a room.
Does that have to be open too, Nick?
Yes,
that
has to be open, yes.
Your individual comments you can supply that, but the actual deliberations have to be open.
Well, we'll all have a crack, right? I mean, even if you're not on this, it's just a recommendation.
That's exactly right. And what I would suggest is when you guys do these deliberations, we got down, you're really talking about, I think, most part, about 5% of the program. If you step one, you want to take the highest in your project, you can move it around and keep in the integrity of the top. I mean, you're talking about 5% of the program. And I know you want to keep integrity. I heard yesterday somebody wants to make sure they get exactly the money they're due, and I get that. That's what you should do, and there's ways to do that. But at the end of the day, as Mr. Brown said, there's not prescriptive in the law as to how you allocate these monies. We thought you should have a methodology to give you the starting point so that, I don't think you want to defend every action you did, so you were defending exceptions to that. But, look, if you sit down and say, I like the top nine, but I want to do this one, and it takes this, and I want to fix it, that's okay. That's exactly what the law allows us to do. So it doesn't have to be a neat and tiny bow is all I'm suggesting. It'd be great if we all speak out, but I doubt that's going to be the case. Your judgment is needed in doing this. Moving around.
This is, an inquiry. As I was doing a little homework here, I realized that the way that some folks are interpreting the existing revised funding with scenarios without step three may not be entirely accurate. And Mr. Donahue was able to explain to me that in some cases there are districts that will be carrying over dollars that, as it's currently presented, and I'm not sure folks are fully aware of. So, for example, I wasn't aware of the fact that in the case of the Bristol District, they would actually not only remain the same at $71 million in allocation for this round, but they'd actually carry over $12
million. Right.
So they'd pick up money under the revised scenario step three. In the case of the Fredericksburg District, although it appears they're losing a project, they actually carry over $10 million, which makes the gap only $1.4 million, which, again, based on the flexibility that we described, or that you just referenced, those issues can be resolved under the revised scenario without step three that I'm not sure everyone was fully aware of. So the gaps are not as significant as they may appear when you initially look at the document, because some districts actually pick up money or carry or have the ability to carry forward or have other money that they can allocate that's not reflected in this total column that's on the far right side.
Ms. Valentine.
Mr. Chairman, even though we're still working with recommendations, my concern is if we don't try to settle on some methodology, we're starting the public hearings. And so when the public hearings are out, are they going to see lists where they might get a project or they won't get a project? I think that's my concern about not coming to some consensus about how we...
Well, again, I think you're pretty close. It just, I didn't hear anybody say, I don't like ranking my projects in the district by score.
No, but it does in my district. It does affect a major city project.
Well, yeah, I'm sure it does. But look, that's the other thing. I actually think that's what these public hearings are about.
So
I don't have an issue if we haven't settled on it while we're having a public hearing.
Well, Mr. Chairman, may I make a point on that?
Yeah.
You're not done?
I'm sorry.
No. I am. I'm thinking.
Oh, okay. You think a minute. If we have comments at any of our districts that aren't in Northern Virginia or Hampton Roads or Fredericksburg that say they don't want to commingle this money, I'd be shocked.
Yeah.
Okay. So just so everybody around the table knows,
I'm not sure the public comment is necessarily, you know, I think we ought to present two things and say, hey, this one might work and this one might work, and by the way, this one we get less money. Okay. My question is going to be for the one we get more money. I'm just saying.
Yeah, I understand that, but I mean,
you
know, but look, think about the public hearings they've been before. There's a few things you get, you know, a few things, but most of them stand up there with a long list and say we need this stuff. Now, that's helpful to us, but now we're up there saying, these are projects you scored. You know, I need input on which ones you get about the scoring and stuff. I think it's a whole different dynamic.
No question.
Whole different dynamic. And I know that's what I think many of you, and I shouldn't say many of you, it runs from, I want this tied up, you know, to I understand about expectations. But I'm actually thinking changing the public's expectations a little bit as part of this process. And, you know, have their input. To all the way to say, you know, I'm very comfortable making these changes. I'm very comfortable looking at my district and making changes. There's some are not doing that. I get it. You know, and I think that's what the beauty of the process is. That's why I thought we did a overall sort of a, you know, methodology, and, you know, that I think you don't want to be defending that you every project you chose would have been different than the rating process. I don't think that was the intent of the law. I'm sure it wasn't the intent of the law in that. On the other hand, it gave you the judgment to say, if there's a few judgments and you say, I want to make a decision, I've made a decision here based on number one priority, I mean, I think it puts a lot of responsibility on this board. What we did before is, that's what DNOT was doing. They were just making a decision for you. I'm not saying it's made it wrong or good. I'm just saying, but they're making it for you. It's sort of like the city of Virginia Beach. You want me to make? I mean, we got to make these decisions. It's our responsibility to make these decisions. And I don't see a problem. I think you're going to get a lot of public input.
Yeah. My thought process in this is that, and I don't disagree, and I think all of us here can hold tension about two different ways or three different ways of allocating funds. It's just that when you go into a public hearing and we get this many projects and on this one we don't, to me, the policy part of this is going to be affected by just the reality. And so rather than making a decision because this is perhaps the appropriate thing to do, I think the decision is going to be based on, okay, this gives us money, so this is what we want to do. I keep saying that, and it's fine.
I get that. I think we're removing
a little bit of the policy discussion, and I will just leave it at that.
Okay.
Let me get to Mr.
Oh, I'm sorry. I had a note.
Maybe it's good. I was changing the topic a little. will the at-large, will we plan to get together before the workshop in April to discuss the high priority here?
Sure. I was going to reach out to the at-large members to see what was the date that worked best for folks and then have that meeting take place.
Okay. Thank you.
Maybe the at-large members could go on the
I mean,
yeah, 33 million. You can
go on your honeymoon with you.
Just allocate some of that high priority money.
Yeah.
Wait a minute, Mr. Frelick's back. I'm going to come back to you because I'm going
to say too many terms already.
I understand. Mr. Chairman, the question is, I'll give you a real world example. I've got a 460 project that did not score within the top 10. I've got another project that we think we can modify, get some money down, and then we'll have to skip a couple projects. So that is a project that spans really two districts. It's in my district, but it spans two districts. My question is, the notices that go out for these public hearings, are they confined to the district? Because I would hope that in that public hearing, I've got people from Lynchburg and Bedford screaming that they really want this project and to give us some inclination. You know, if you believe in the quote that 90% of life is given to those who show up, you know, even though Woody Allen said it, I do think it's right. How's that work?
I don't have any problem. I don't have any problem if we, you know, if you want to add additional people to your public hearing.
Right. And we can do that too and send it out. I mean, I can do that.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, they don't have to be.
We provide the dates and locations for all 9 public hearings in the same public notice.
Okay, perfect. Ms. Valentine.
And in anticipation of our public hearings, there was the original recommendation that went out to everyone. Regardless, that list has already been amended because of changes that we've made. And so I was just saying in our communications about this meeting, you know, making sure we address the fact that there was an original list of recommendations. We have a revised list based on these recommended changes, and we have, you know.
I think we ought to show them every project we got scored.
Mr. Chairman, can I just clarify some terminology here? So we keep talking about recommendations. I think I've heard you and Mr. Donahue both say these weren't recommendations. This simply was the output of the process. So they
They were recommendations.
I
firmly believe that the law was meant to pretty much use the highest ranked ones unless you chose.
But the process for step 3 or not?
No.
Right. Now I want to be clear about that because there was not a recommendation that step 3 become mingled or not. It was simply a starting point as you described.
Sure.
And I think we ought to be very clear in our terminology because I think there could be confusion in the district as to what is the status quo versus not.
It was an attempt to basically say you can't have exactly the number that you get allocated, and here's a way to allocate the difference.
Mr. Chairman, I would say there's 2 recommended scenarios for the board to consider. The board will at some point pick one of those and then modify them.
Right.
The revised phase
and
the
number
revised
2.
Phase without 3.
Yes.
Which is not really a good option.
Editorial comment. But I think, you know, you're right, the high priority projects, I mean, clearly they wanted projects that moved the needle. And it was clearly those in the districts that were the highest ranked, with your discretion, so. The question came is that didn't actually equal what to do with that remaining delta.
So we should have gotten deeper into this earlier anyway. This is the policy discussion that should be taking place.
Mm-hmm.
We should discuss
that. Yeah, we're 3 months ahead of the game.
Right.
Normally you didn't get this till April.
Oh, no. Mr. Chairman, I think there's no question, as Marty said, this is a way better process. But, you know, I'll make this point. I don't think anybody from any one of these districts thought that they didn't have any high priority district projects in their district, or that there weren't any high priority districts in Salem, or that the high priority district money that they would get would not be, if they did get it, would have to be on a small project because it wasn't going to score. I mean, I think that you all did the right thing. And so.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that was 1887. The whole thing was to make sure every district got it.
Right.
But and 67% of the money, every district gets a part. There was no guarantee of the high priority that any district would get a part.
Right.
That was really the thinking behind, and maybe we didn't. The legislation was that because it was we want these projects to move the needle.
Depends on where you want to move that.
I understand. And I'm not suggesting to you that it didn't, but I'm not saying about the size of it.
I know.
Yeah, I'm not saying that the size is wrong, but
the bulk is going to those. I mean, you know, that's...
Well, partially because, look, 66, let's just be honest, 66 distorted everything because it was just stuck out it clearly froze the bar for almost every score. I think you'll see a little different next year. A little different next year.
Mr. Chairman, just for illustrative purposes, on that point, if 66 had not been in this round, or had, say, been 150, that would have brought in projects from at least 3 more districts across the Commonwealth. It also really modified the scores in a lot of districts because it is the top-scoring project in so many category areas. It suppressed scores on a host of different scoring criteria throughout the Commonwealth because it was leaps and bounds above the projects because it's so big
it's not
so impactful.
And again, I want to be clear again on the language. We are talking of this. Every district did get high priority money. Every district did get some high priority projects, but some of those projects were funded by the district dollars in some instances. So there were projects that could have qualified for either.
I agree with that.
Correct.
I think what Mr. Fralin was saying is he was referring to the high priority projects funds, and depending on which area you go in, not every district gets high priority funds.
But projects that qualify as high priority, in some cases in our district, we funded high priority projects with district dollars.
Yeah, I think he was referring to the project
he was
funds.
Talking about. The 27.5%.
But to get into terms, you know, high priority also means statewide. And when you're funding interstate projects with district money, I don't think that's fair.
I concur.
And you know what? I tend to agree with that, except we have limited resources.
I concur.
I mean, in other words, I mean, I agree. But if we do that, I mean, look, we're talking about $400 million a year here on an ongoing basis. That's what we're talking about. Yeah. But so, to make sure Mr. Donahue will get some dates out, he will also reach out to the at-large members.
Mm-hmm. And the key thing is, please send those emails this week.
Yeah.
So that we can work with Chad, Kim, Margie, and the other folks behind the scenes to get them to run stuff while I'm not paying attention to this for 2 weeks. So that when we come back in April, we can have materials ready for you guys in advance of that discussion.
When do you return?
Well, I'll be back in April. April 1st.
He's keeping a secret. He's not letting anybody know. I said last night, I said, Nick, man, we got this thing in Vermont and all this. He goes, no, don't you say it. My wife will kill me.
I'm writing my resignation letter.
All right, is there any other business to come before the board today? Any announcements for next time? We are in Lynchburg. We're in Lynchburg next time. So that will be coming out. And I think we have the 6-year plan here the night before in Lynchburg. Yeah, so for some of us, we'll be there three nights, or two nights. We'll be there Monday for the 6-year plan hearing, and then the next night will be the CTB, and then we'll have our action items. You're all, in the spirit of Mr. Phelan inviting others, you're all invited to come to Lynchburg, the 6-year plan hearing, if you like, too. So in that, yeah, in that. So, all right, with that, I'll adjourn the meeting. Thank you all.
I would have.